Yes, it's Talking Travel on 2NUR FM 103.7, and I'm joined by Sally Lucas. Hi, Sal.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Good to have you.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, where are we going today?
Well, I thought we'd clear the air, or try and clear the air, it's still a bit murky, about the UK visa change, which has been very confusing for dual citizens.
Yeah, it is.
And then we'll talk about some trending destinations for this year, focusing mainly on Egypt.
Wonderful. All right, we'll get to that shortly on 2NUR FM. Newcastle and the Hunters, 2NUR FM 103.7. This is Talking Travel. And we're talking about British passports. It's quite confusing at the moment, Sally.
It is. There's been almost a full-page article in the Sydney Morning Herald this week, and there was even quite a lengthy discussion about it on the local news channel last night as well, or the night before. I can't remember which it was now. But it is very confusing. When I've gone online, the best that I can find, and this is from the UK High Commission website, and my husband's mother was born there, but not his father. Now, as far as I can ascertain, it's your father that was born there. But I would suggest you would still need to do a double check on that. It didn't say mother, it just said father.
That's weird.
Yes, but there is a website now, or a link is the better word, that the UK government has provided, and you just put in check if you're a British citizen, and there's a web page there which will allow you to confirm what documents you need upon arrival. So basically now, you know, the old days of dual citizenship where you could just, you know, wander in with a entry certificate have gone. That will be no longer available as of now. And a lot of people have been caught short, not realising this was the case, and have even, in some instances, have had, you know, lost money with cancellation fees, because then when they've realised they've had to apply for the passport, there's still, some of them are still waiting. And because all this has happened so suddenly, it's taking 4 weeks or longer just to get a UK passport. So you've just got to be very, very careful there and make sure you get in very early if you suspect that you are going to need a British passport.
Well, I heard that there's a little bit of a grace period as far as people can use their old expired British passports.
I think it was only for a limited time, I think because of the confusion, as we just said. But to get a new passport, as I said, which requires, you know, you have to renew that every so often as well, it's £108 for an online adult application in Australia, £70 for a child, plus about a £20 courier fee, which amounts to about £380 all up if you were to get one for a child and one for yourself. Typically a 4-week turnaround, but I'd be saying it, that will stretch out to longer than that with the amount of people that are probably going to have to apply that didn't realise they had, or, you know, they've just realised they have to. So I can't think what the actual, they said about the interim letting you get through on the old passport, but that might be on that website as well. I wasn't looking for that. I was just looking to see what the, you know, the ramifications were, depending on whether it was one or two parents born there. But yes, go onto that webpage, check if you're a British citizen, and it will give you links to, do you think, you know, how do I apply? Was my mother born there? Was my father, et cetera. So it'll give you all these little links that you can look up and find out what is applicable.
So what's the website again?
Check if you're a British citizen.
Okay.
All right. And that will take you, just Google that, and it will take you to that particular link on the UK British government website.
And I was watching the news, and they were saying, you know, it's so much to get to renew your British passport, which actually worked out cheaper than renouncing your British citizenship. And it was like $1,000 or something.
Yeah, but they're saying, like, you can get this certificate of entitlement if you don't want to get a passport, but the certificate of entitlement is just a one-off, one entry. It's £589.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So why wouldn't you just get a passport?
Exactly.
I mean, they're all saying a little rumours, is the government just out there as a moneymaker? Of course, they're denying that.
Yeah,
but
of course.
Anyhow, it just seems a bit weird to me, like we've been able to go to and fro between our two countries, you know, and we're still, at the moment, we're not a republic, we are part of the Commonwealth, and I just find that's really bizarre. I mean, there's 85 countries affected, but yeah, anyway, there you go.
Yeah, they said it's something to do with security.
Yes, we're a definite risk to the British society.
We are. Well, are we talking about anything else, or are we just going to...
We'll definitely talk about other things as well. Just a few of the top trending 20... This is, look, everyone comes up with a top trending destination, and these may not even be on your bucket list, but, you know, everyone's got their own that they think is somewhere new and somewhere they really want to go to. Egypt is really up there at the moment, especially since the opening of the new museum, which we'll talk about a little bit further later. But the Canada and Alaska area, again, is another area that tops everyone's bucket list all the time. The amount of people that want to do the Rockies and then do the Alaskan Passage Inside Cruise, it's still up there. So I wouldn't call it top trending. I would say it's ongoing trending. Mm. It's always been a popular destination. Scandinavia, well, we all know those beautiful, you know, Arctic countries of Norway and Finland and, you know, Denmark, etc. They're just beautiful, as well as, of course, we've talked about recently Greenland and Iceland, etc., Svalbard. So you've got also the Baltic capitals around that area as well that you can get to, which is really interesting, like to go in to Estonia, you know, to Tallinn, to Riga. And of course you've got all the lovely ports and the lovely fjords. And, you know, it's just really, I don't know, I'd call it dramatic scenery, all the fjords and everything. It's just spectacularly beautiful. Morocco, that's another one that's up there now on people's bucket list to go to. Casablanca, of course, everyone loves that name, Casablanca. You know,
from the movie, isn't it?
Yeah, that conjures up all these images as well. And also you've got to remember there, it's got the largest mosque outside of Mecca, which is also in Morocco. Of course, the Med is always enduringly popular, any part of the Med, whether it's Italy or, you know, Sicily, which is part of Italy, of course, Malta, Cyprus, Greece, you know, all that area is always popular. Germany, now a lot of people, that was never on our bucket list, but it's getting there more and more now that people wish to go to Germany.
Germany's lovely.
It is, and the Bavaria part of it as well, the forests and everything. And Munich's a gorgeous
lovely,
city.
Yeah.
Did you know that the surf doesn't run anymore? You know the famous surf they had, that the river that ran through that park called the English Garden? They did something to clean up the river, and all the surfers, I was even there when it was running, and you could ride a surfboard on this river because of the volume of water coming down. They've done something to it in the cleanup, and there's no more surf. So everyone's disappointed now that you can't go surfing in a landlocked city of Munich.
Well, actually, I've got a piece of the Berlin Wall.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
so
I haven't got that.
My stepdaughter went there recently and brought me back a piece. So pretty cool.
It is cool. Portugal's another one, and that's a great place as well. Again, you've got lovely, you know, the Douro River, where there's lovely river cruises you can do now. But just the way of life, the food, everything. Spain and Portugal, to me, are great. Scotland, of course, I mean, it's the Commonwealth Games. It was a draw card in 2026. But also it's just, I mean, the Edinburgh Castle, the Shetland Islands, all those areas, the Orkney Islands, you know, just a gorgeous area of the world. Hopefully you'll get there this year.
I know.
Eastern Europe, I mean, it's emerging as one of the most compelling regions for culturally curious travellers, I'll say. And, of course, you've got the elegance of Vienna. You've got Budapest with its thermal bars and its famous parliament building. Belgrade is lovely. And you've got fantastic towns through Eastern Europe. And look, just across the ditch, New Zealand.
Yeah. Oh. Really. It's worth going to.
It's just, you know, my son's over there at the moment, he's in the North Island, but sending me all these beautiful foresty photos and waterfalls. You forget how lush and green it is, you know. Every time he goes there to visit his wife's family, he goes back to Perth, he thinks, what am I living here for in this dry, arid-looking place when I could be living in New Zealand?
Exactly.
Isn't that funny?
Exactly.
So there's just some, but I'm sure every one of our listeners has got some place out there that they would think would be either trending or somewhere they would really like to go to that's different this year.
Yeah, I know I do anyway. we'll be back shortly with more Talking Travel on 2NURFM. Good times, great music, 2NURFM 103.7. This is Talking Travel with Sally Lucas. And where are we going now, Sally?
Egypt.
Oh, great.
Yes, I think there's no other place that I can imagine. Again, I always have conjured up images in my mind. I read a lot about Egyptology and a lot of books based in Egypt over the years from a young girl, and I just think it's just one of those incredible countries, so diverse. You know, as we said, from majestic pyramids to monolithic temples, I mean, it's just amazing. Just thinking of the pyramids in itself, you know, that they in itself are just, you gaze at that. I guess like we gaze at Uluru, even though it wasn't man-made, but it's still one of those things you just sit there and look and think, wow.
Mm, in awe.
In all, yeah, absolutely. So obviously if you go there, you're going to be doing that and you're going to see the Great Sphinx, of course. And these sort of monumental tombs have endured for over 4,500 years, which is really quite amazing, even though some of it's, you know, has some fallen away and some of it has degraded over the years. When you think of how old it is, that's still pretty amazing. And of course, if you're going into Egypt, I mean, everyone wants to do the Luxor and Karnak temples. I mean, that's just the spiritual capital, really, of Egypt is Luxor. And it's characterised by temples and richly decorated tombs and very historic, of course, it's significantly architectural feats. And they've got a wonderful market culture there as well. And it's also referred to as one of the world's greatest open-air museums because there's still so much there. There's an incredible statues, and it's built on the original town was Thebes, of course, back in the day, and it's UNESCO World Heritage now, and it's home to the imposing Temple of Karnak, which is one of the world's largest temple complexes, as well as the preserved Temple of Luxor as well. Abu Simbel, of course, that's another area that's famous, of course, steeped into history again, where again we've got these wonderful temples of Ramses II, which were constructed in the 13th century BC. Like, it's hard to get your head around it sometimes, isn't it? Really. And rediscovered only in the early 19th century and also a UNESCO World Heritage Site. But it was relocated in stages between 1964 and 68 during the construction of the Aswan Dam. And then you've got the Valley of the Kings, which is near Luxor along the Nile. And it's renowned as the ancient burial site for Egypt's pharaohs, including Tutankhamun, Ramses IV and Seti I, amongst others, dating from the 16th to the 11th centuries BC, which is just, again, this incredible royal necropolis, which is, features dozens of tombs, which are intricately adorned with hieroglyphics, carved columns, and incredible wall paintings as well. And then we've also got now, of course, the wonderful Grand Egyptian Museum, which took two decades to build. But now you've just got so many artefacts there. We're talking about, it spans 120 acres.
That is a lot.
And it's on the Giza Plateau, and it houses approximately 100,000 ancient Egyptian artefacts, including the 3,200-year-old statue of Ramses II. So it's just amazing, and it's the largest archaeological museum in the world.
You'd need a lot of time to get to, you know, go through it.
Oh, you would.
It'd be like the Louvre.
What do you think of the Louvre? Like, you might get through one or two sections in a day if you're lucky, aren't you? Mm. The same when you go to the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, in D.C. My God, like, I think I might have only done one section there or two in a day. So all these wonderful big museums and things that you can go to, you've really got to allocate time, but also seek out maybe your research of what parts of that museum you're more interested in so that you're spending time in those areas.
You'd hate to miss something that you were
and
looking forward to.
And check when they're open. Mm. That's the most important thing. A lot of museums shut Mondays and Tuesdays, but that's not necessarily so you need to check. Hot deals next.
Hot deals next. This is 2NURFM. 2NURFM on air, online and on your smartphone. This is Talking Travel and it's time for Hot Deals, Sally.
Okay, firstly, we're going to head to Western Australia. Not that we've been talking about that today, but we will anyhow. So we've got to remember that the coastline from Albany to Broome is just quite amazing. Like, you've got coral reefs, living fossils, indigenous heritage spanning 65,000 years. And, you know, it's just amazing because we've even got maritime history there that dates back to 1616. So coral expeditions now are expanding their range of cruises along that coastline, which means you've got a lot of options now. So it's not just the Broome-Kimberley region. So depending on what you're interested in, they're doing the Abrolhos Islands and the Coral Coast, and they're doing what they call whales and trails, where they do the southwest coast where the Indian and the Southern Oceans meet at the right time of the year. They're doing the coastal adventures, which is doing the coastal landscape of right down the southwestern part of Western Australia, Ningaloo and the Rowley Shoals they're doing as well. So just consider that there's a whole range of nice little cruises now, which is on small expedition cruising, available at different times throughout the year. Obviously, you wouldn't want to do these in the summer months. Western Australia gets very hot at that time of the year, obviously. And once you're in the north, of course, you're subject to, you know, cyclonic conditions as well. So always think of going there, I would say, you know, between May and September is probably the best times to consider going there. But there's lots of options there if you're thinking of doing a cruise or even combining it with a land journey you'd like to do. Because these cruises, some of them are only 5 days, some of them are up to 10 or 11. So it's not like they're long duration cruises. So you could fit it into, hopefully, your land itinerary as well. HX, our wonderful HX, Hurtigruten, if Mark was here, he'd want me to say Hurtigruten.
Hurtigruten.
So they've got actually some exclusive offers available till the 23rd of March. Now, these are quite good because you're getting up to $1,750 off and $400 to spend on board. Now, the range of areas they're going to is Alaska's Inside Passage, which you've just mentioned, Fjords of the Great Land, and also another one that's just a 10-day, a 13-night one, Alaska's Inside Passage, where the mountains meet the sea, which is quite more extensive. So that's lovely that they've got a range of those, which we've just mentioned, and also the Galapagos, another exceptional part of the world. If you're anyone that's interested in nature or loves the David Attenborough documentaries, you'd want to go to the Galapagos. Now, they've got up to $5,500 off some of their expeditions, again, plus the extra $400 per person discount to spend on board. Again, with HX, and that ends also on the 23rd of March. Bunnings have got some lovely tours as well. They've got a great Egypt-Jordan tour, by the way, if anyone is interested in going to Egypt. It's a great combination. And they have flights included with theirs, which means it's an all-up package. And they include tipping as well, and no more than 20 passengers. So keep that in mind. You don't want to, again, go to Egypt in the summer months. You would absolutely faint and die of the heat. You wouldn't live. You wouldn't survive. So you've got to go there basically in our summer months, which is their winter. So November through to about March probably would be the latest you want to go. But they also have some great hot deals to other areas as well, including Japan, highlights of South America, Namibia, Botswana and the Victoria Falls. They've got last minute subject to availability is what they say. And some of these have got up to like $2,000 per person off depending on the length of the journey, so keep those in mind. And also Viking Cruises have still got their fly free offers going until sold out on their river cruises, where you fly free up to $5,000 per couple. You can upgrade to business class as well and get a credit or an airfare credit. And also on their ocean and expedition cruises, you can get $2,500 per couple airfare credit. So a lot of discounts still available. Basically they say until sold out, but I would say roughly you'd want to get in before the end of March with most of these, or you will find they will be sold out.
Okay, well, some good hot deals there, and we'll catch you in a couple of weeks. Sal, not here next week, but we'll see you after that.
We will. You're only going to miss me for a week.
This is Talking Travel on 2NURFM.